We'll call this meeting of the State of the Labor and Industry Finance and Policy Commission, or Policy Committee, to order. Today is January 19th, Thursday, 2023. The LA will take the note, or note the roll call. Members, we found an issue with the minutes. Some people have one page, other people have a different page. So we'll do the minutes next week, next Tuesday. So just forget about, we're going to forget about the minutes for today. Also, the fiscal note for today's, only one of two pages got printed. We're getting that printed right now, and it'll be down to us shortly. So, but we do have the fiscal note. It came in this morning for House File 70. And with that, Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee. I guess I'm going to blame it all on you then today, because it's all the mistakes because you're here. But anyway, I'll move that House File 70 be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance Committee. And welcome to the committee if you want to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Pleased to be back in front of the Labor Committee with the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights. The first time I brought a similar bill to this committee was in 2007, which was just yesterday, I think. We passed legislation in 2007, which has not been updated since 2007. In 2000, I believe in 15, a legislative auditor reviewed the work of the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights had some suggestions. We have attempted to pass those several years, and so we are back here again with House File 70. Generally, what House File 70 is requiring employers in packing houses and poultry facilities to provide information to their workers about their rights. It's really that simple, is that you provide information to the workers about the rights that they have, provide it in languages that they use, and have consequences if you do not provide the information to the workers about the rights that they have. We just received a fiscal note prior to the committee. I think, Mr. Chair,
I think it's being passed out right now. So I mentioned that it was in the pack because it was just the two pages of it, not the full fiscal note, but it's getting passed out now.
And I believe there is written testimony provided, and I do have testifiers for the bill. It makes various modifications and additions to the Fair Labor Standards for agricultural and food processing workers. Makes changes to the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights, strengthening this now 16-year-old law. I would ask you to consider and to support this. I think it's kind of basic information. This is the result of agency effort on bringing folks together during COVID or after COVID, involved in packing houses and agricultural workers to come up with these suggestions, and lo and behold, they came up with a suggestion similar to what we had proposed before and to what the auditor had looked at. So you have a number of third-party evaluations that have said we need to do more. I believe, Mr. Chair, the route that this bill would take is, if it was passed out of here, it would go to the Judiciary Committee, Chair Becker Finn's committee, for some of the financial or the liability issues, penalties, and then it would come back here because we didn't have time to put in some of the numbers on the finances. So with that, I would be open for our testifiers to come forward.
First person I have my list is Mr. Bernie Hess. Welcome to the committee. I see him moving down to the testifiers table. Welcome, and again, please state your name for the tape and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bernie Hess, United Food and Commercial Workers Union. I'd like to thank you for hearing the bill and the committee. Also like to thank Representative Hansen for bringing this forward again. It's very important. Five real quick points. When you work in a plant, you're exposed to a number of things. Things that have changed. This industry has really changed in the last 30, even 40 years. We've got a tremendous amount of pathogens that are flying about. We learned about that during COVID. Automation is unreal from compared to the past. We always say food safety is worker safety. Another issue in the plants why workers need to know is a lot of workers are brought in through temp agencies and the pay situation isn't always clear to them. They need to know their rights. They need to know about worker comp, especially if they're newly arrived. Sometimes folks are really hesitant when they get injured. They need to know about unemployment insurance because sometimes there's, you know, a slowing down in the industry. They also need to know a lot about OSHA. We think this bill will add incentive to make good operators get their workforce trained. And the more trained a workforce is, the better they are, the safer they are. Over the years, I have seen folks get cut. I've seen amputations. There's been slips, trips, and falls. Hearing loss is a big thing now. Scalds and burns, there's a lot of chemicals being used. Repetitive motion injuries, shocks, and exposure to chemicals. Some of our plants are aging, so we've got real issues around refrigeration and ammonia, and that's a separate thing, but they're dangerous places. The more training we can give people, the more information, the safer they will be. I stand for any questions, but I want to thank you for hearing this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hess. Questions for Mr. Hess? Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this bill forward. Mr. Hess, thank you for your testimony as well. I'm wondering if you can go into more detail about what it's like to actually work in one of these packing houses and if that landscape has changed since the bill was originally authored.
Mr. Hess.
Chair, Representative, thing that I've seen since 07 is a lot more automation. Lines have been sped up. I'm an old person, so back in the day, back when I had hair, slaughter rates were a lot slower. Now you're looking at, down at Worthington, 1,000 to 1,100 head an hour are put down. That's for swine. At Hormel's, I think they're closer to 1,500 or 1,600 an hour. So the speed and the whole thing that we've got a very, very diverse workforce, even more now than 07. We have a plant that has over 35 languages. So a lot of different cultures, a lot of different languages. A lot of plants make it work, but we really need to have this in statute.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. That's really important. Do you know how many people in Minnesota, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hess, are employed in this sector and how many people this would bring up? Even a ballpark is fine.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, in meat processing and food processing, it's broadly, there's 400,000 people. Okay, not all work in plants, but it's in all industries that have a number of issues. In just with beef, boy, I'm just guessing several thousand. Swine, there's a lot more, with pork. And poultry, there's a lot, several thousand.
Representative Hansen, I think you got an answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Jordan, if you look on the fiscal note on page 3, DLI estimates approximately 17,400 meatpacking and poultry processing workers in the state that would be covered under this. So that's the basis of the fiscal note statewide in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very significant part of our state's workforce. This is also something I think affects all of our districts because we have people who eat meat in all of our districts. And I know that the food that my constituents care about, who is taking care of them, and it is our meat packers. It is our people who are producing our food. And I think this is something we can do for our state and the workers that we all depend on. So thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Any other questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Hess. The next person I have on my list is Jessica Gross. Director of Labor Standards and Apprenticeships. Welcome to the committee. Please, again, state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. My name is Jessica Gross, and I'm the Director of Labor Standards and Apprenticeship at Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 70. This legislation reflects one of the recommendations that was made by the Agricultural Worker Wellness Committee to the governor in a written report on December 1st, 2021. The committee was established via Executive Order 2114 and is comprised of worker and community representatives, state agency representatives, including individuals from the Department of Agriculture, DLI, the Department of Health, and DEED, as well as employer representatives from the Minnesota Farm Bureau, Minnesota Farmers Union, and Minnesota Agri-Growth Council. The committee is supported by state agency representatives. I'm part of that state agency support group, and I also represent DLI in the committee. Recommendations to the governor were discussed and developed over 17 meetings between April and November of 2021. The recommendation related to this bill was approved unanimously by the committee members who were present at the November 22nd, 2021 meeting. In subsequent meetings, committee members have expressed ongoing support of this recommendation. House File 70 updates and expands three worker protection laws that currently exist in Minnesota. One of these laws, the Migrant Labor Law, was enacted in 1981, and its most recent update was in 2005. Many of its provisions have never been updated. A second law, the Recruitment in Food Processing Employment Law, was enacted in 1995 and has never been updated. And similarly, the third law, the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights, has never been updated and was enacted in 2007. This legislation updates these laws by adjusting for inflation, the potential penalties, damages, and fines for violations of these laws. And it also provides clarity regarding how these laws relate to other employment-related responsibilities under Minnesota law. The legislation also does the following. First, in regards to the Migrant Labor Law, it expands the scope of workers that are protected under this law to include all recruited migrant agricultural workers. It requires that the written employment statement provided at the time of recruitment is provided in the worker's preferred language. It expands the scope of the information that must be provided in the written employment statement to include information about a worker, about the employer's workers' compensation insurance. It requires that the employer maintain this written employment statement for a period of 3 years, and it provides DLI with enforcement authority so that it can issue compliance orders and penalties for violations of this law. In relation to the Recruitment and Food Processing Employment Law, it expands the scope of food processing workers that are covered under the law to include those that relocate from within Minnesota to perform food processing employment. And it also requires that the written disclosure provided at recruitment is provided in the worker's preferred language. In terms of the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights, some of this has already been covered, but it expands the scope of workers that would be protected under this law to include poultry processing workers as well. It requires that the explanation that is provided to workers, that it be provided both in person and in writing. It requires that the explanation be provided to workers at the start of employment. It expands the scope of information that must be provided to include information regarding the employer's workers' compensation insurance carrier, as well as the right to workers' compensation insurance coverage. And it provides for a private right of action, as well as authority for DLI to take action to address violations of the law. The proposed amendments and additions to these three worker protection laws in Minnesota would help a greater number of agricultural and food processing workers to be fully informed about the terms and conditions of their employment and their workplace rights. And it would also help employers of these workers to better understand how their responsibilities under these three laws relate to other responsibilities they have as employers in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for your time and consideration of this legislation.
Thank you, Ms. Gross. Any questions of the testifier? Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I'm looking at on the bill brief here, 17 and 18 statement itemizing deductions from wages and record keeping, all of that being part of the wage theft law, I'm wondering if there's any data on employers who have engaged in wage theft and have not been in compliance with some of the statutes that we see referenced.
Ms. Gross.
DOI does not have information related to this currently because we currently don't have enforcement authority over the migrant labor law. So in terms of data related to 181.87 or 181.88, we wouldn't retain that as we don't currently enforce those laws.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? If not, thank you, Ms. Gross. Again, any further questions on the bill of the author? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, question for you in regards to your bill. Certainly it's very important that we protect our workers and our employers who employ them as well. It seems that your fines are a little bit hefty. They've increased somewhat. So I'm just curious as to, in your bill, does it allow the Department of Labor to adjust for a clerical error? So should an error by human, because humans, we err, does it allow the Department of Labor to not instill that deepest fine that you have increased from 200 to what? What is it?
800.
Yeah, there's one that went 816 and 2 to 4 and 3 to 6. So does that allow that to happen?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, you know, I'll go to my experience way back when I worked in state agencies. There's usually discretion there. Oftentimes there's a progressive enforcement where there's written warnings and then before you get to a penalty. I could have the DLI person come up to see if anything has changed since that time, but usually with administrative penalties, you have the agencies have some discretion, and this provides the amounts. You know, if you look at the civil action per violation or twice the damages, damage award shall be greater. You know, you have the agencies have discretion to be working with the employer, but they also are going to be looking out for the employee that happens here. I think when you look at the amounts, as the DLI testifier indicated, some of these provisions were put in 30 years ago, and the amount has not changed. And so when we're increasing the penalties, and that's why it's going to go to the Judiciary Committee, so they will look at those penalties more when it gets there. It's trying to keep up with the time that has passed and what is the consequence, what's an appropriate consequence for these violations. Again, going back to the bill, this is about trying to provide information. And I think when you have that communication that's there on the rights of the employees, that also provides protection for the employer that they have done that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Yeah, definitely. Fairly said that we look at the fines that were 30 years ago, but I'm sure you're aware that we just are going through a pandemic. We're in a recession, and now we're probably going to go into a worse recession in 2023. So your timing after 30 years of increasing fine, personally, I find probably a little bit off. I think this is an opportunity that we not fine and hurt our job creators and employers, but give them an opportunity. So maybe in 2 years when the economy rebounds, and we're over this COVID-19, a pandemic which shut down the world, maybe that would be a good time to increase time. I see this is very poor timing as yet another increase on job creators and businesses. And we hope that maybe they won't make a mistake. But we are human. To err is human, is the quote. We hope that Dolly will be fair and equitable in stating these fines, should there be a honest mistake. So your timing is off, I think. So I hope perhaps when it goes to judiciary, they say, you know what, because we went through a two-year pandemic and the recession and workers, trying to find workers, are you kidding me? The Pizza Hut in Delano is closed, as many other factories and warehouses in all your districts, because we can't find employees to work. Matter of fact, there's 7 million able-bodied men and women that are not working, and 11 million jobs needed to be filled. Minnesota just came out with the fact of 4 million able-bodied, 4 million jobs that need to be filled. So the timing just is off, I think, personally. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm only one guy from Delano. But, and I'll just close in this. We have, and maybe you were a part of this, Representative Nelson, because you've been in here as a state rep for how many years?
A while.
Hanson, what did I say?
He's been long.
Oh. Yeah, never mind, Representative Hanson. How long have you been here, Representative Nelson?
This is my 11th term, so oh, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Hanson. No, I'm Nelson. You Swedes, I get them mixed up. Anyway, Representative Hanson, Dolly and Minosha and the Department of Labor already has laws that protect employees and employers, but particularly employees. Again, government duplicative. Boy, we know how to duplicate things 2, 3, 4 times. So if you go to the Department of Labor's and Industries website, and there's it's very easy to navigate the website, by the way. Is the Department of Labor and Industry here? Anybody here? Bueller? Who's ever in charge of your website, wonderful job. It's easy. It's just your IT is smack on. Anyway, so in law already, employee notice. All employers must provide each employee with a written notice at the start of their employment and keep a signed copy of the notice on file. That's already in law and it's in your bill. The notice must contain required information about an employee's employment status and terms of employment. That's in your bill. It's already in law. The notice must include a statement in multiple languages that informs the employees that may request their notice to be provided to them in another language. That's in your bill. That's already in law. And maybe you'll explain, maybe you have a better idea than this law already. Employers are required to provide employees in writing any changes to the information in the notices before the date changes to take effect. That's already current law. That's in your bill. Another duplication. Employers may use their example notice to create their own in a Minneapolis, et cetera, et cetera. And then it goes on to talk about wage theft and workers' comp. Same thing, your law, your bill. As a state rep, I like to have a bill that can help the little guy and all of Minnesotans. But again, it's all duplicative. Minosha, Department of Labor, already does this job. Maybe they're not aware of some of the areas that needs tweaking. And if so, have they been contacted and have been helped with your bill and enforcing the law that's already on the books?
Representative Hanson, I'm looking at the bill, and yes, there's a lot of things that are current law that are in here, but as I know about seeing bills that are brought forward, the changes are either crossed through if they're being removed or underlined if they're new language. The other language is just printing out what currently is in law. That's my understanding, but Representative Hanson.
Yes, Chair Nelson, and I like that Representative McDonald is praising the work that I did in 2007. I wrote that language back then and passed it. And, you know, with time, we need to have some evolution. And we've learned things over that time. And there were things that we could not pass at that time because there was opposition at that time. So bringing in the poultry workers, for one thing, makes the same standards for the pork or the beef. The same notifications would be there for the poultry workers as there is for their brothers and sisters that are working in the beef or the pork. The information that's there, we're clarifying it, we're adding to it, and then we're adding those penalties. I would take issue, you know, I don't think we're in a recession. I think we have had a good run coming out of COVID in terms of looking at our economy. But I want to go back to the COVID period, because where was some of the most challenging efforts? And they were in the meatpacking industry. We had, when it hit, it was horrible. And there were people who suffered. And, you know, there were, and all through the supply chain with meatpacking, people suffered. And many of those companies received support from the government during that time. And so as we're moving forward with that support for those industries, a very consolidated industry, a very large industry, and for those companies, a very profitable industry, just providing basic information on the rights of the employees to those employees, this bill is a very minimal step, I think. And I think, as I mentioned before, DLI has the discretion, if there is a technical error, but if it's not a technical error, if they're not providing the information on the rights to the employees, then we are increasing the penalties. Representative Wolgema will be coming later with a more comprehensive bill. This bill is the result not only of building on the work that I passed in 2007, but a legislative audit report, and we like the legislative auditor, we like that independent review saying we need to change things, but also the executive branch pulling together people from the outside saying we need to do things. And as the testimony occurred just a few moments ago, they said that there were changes that need to be there. It was unanimously adopted by the meeting in 2021, again shortly coming out of COVID, that we need to make these changes. So I would ask you for that support. I'd ask you for that trust. You know, back in 2007, when I was sitting here and my hair wasn't as gray, there were people who said, if we pass this bill, you know, essentially we'd be destroying an industry and the world will end as we know it because we passed the bill. It didn't. It didn't. We didn't destroy the industry. So we need to update. We need to modify and change to deal with the world of 2023 rather than 2007. And providing the information and having a consequence that is appropriate for this time, I don't think is too much to ask. And I'd ask you to support the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald, then I've got other testimony.
Yeah, I'll close up. I'll close up. Certainly I know what a underlined part of a bill is, new language. So thank you, Representative Nelson. After 13 years, if I don't, kick me out. And it's wise to update laws, absolutely, 100%. I'm not saying we shouldn't. I just think the timing right now, Representative Hansen, with the increased fines, albeit they're not out of the world, they're still harmful for a clerical error or a mistake, unintentional, in a time where we're still in recovery. So for those reasons, I'm not sure I can support it. And the fact that some of the great language in your new bill is already law, I probably won't support it because it's already law. But thank you for your explanation and your good work in 2007, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a question, but before I begin, I'm interested in when the right time to pass this bill is. I know it's been around for a while, and so this time feels like when we see it is a really rough time for farmers who aren't getting what they need from our poultry processors or our meat processor. It's also a rough time for workers, and it's a rough time for consumers. But when you look at the profits that are being made in this industry right now, in recent years, they're at record profits. So when we talk about who we should be standing up for right now and who really is struggling, to me, this bill is right where it needs to be. It is about, and we heard another bill, it's about providing information to workers so that they can keep themselves safe and that they can keep their community safe. And so my question as we think about doing this, is it'd be helpful, and it may be from you, Representative Hansen, or you, Mr. Hess, but how will having this additional information, when we pass this law, how will that impact workers' ability to keep themselves safe, to make sure that they get what they need that they can't get now.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Greenman. You know, I work a lot in the environment area, and we have a saying that prevention is better than cleanup. And really that applies to workplace safety as well. If you can provide the information for the worker and the employer, and they have that communication, then that helps. This is a tough job, you know, and when you look at folks who used to work in this a long time ago, I grew up with people missing fingers and thumbs and who worked in difficult jobs. And that still does occur. And how can we prevent that? How can we reduce those injuries? And having communication helps reduce those injuries. I think we've got a couple other testifiers that might be able to give actual examples of that. So.
Is there, I see Mr. Hess moving down here. I only had the two testifiers on my list. We can ask for additional testifiers.
Mr. Chair, Representative, workers that are newly arrived have a hard time when they get injured going on to workers' comp. Some people are very frightened. I've had members just disappear after they've gotten hurt in plants because of their status. That's one thing. Another thing is the pay thing. Some plants initially were using outside services, so they were given debit cards, but they weren't told that every time they used the debit card to pull cash out, they got charged like a buck and a half, whatever the fee was. It's just knowledge is power. It empowers people themselves when they know their rights. So worker comp is huge. I can't stress that enough. And it's really hard enough when a person gets hurt and English isn't their first language when they go to a clinic to have things explained to them. And for that alone, we really do need this.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really appreciate that from both of you. I think that as we think about what we're doing here, a big purpose of it is to empower workers to be able to, you know, take advantage of the laws that are currently on the books and also come to us and tell us when we need to change those laws to update them. And to the point about workers' comp, I mean, we really are talking about laws that are currently there, as Representative McDonald said, to protect folks. But if you don't know you have that and you don't have access to that information, you can't exercise your current rights. So I just really appreciate this bill. I know you've been working on it for a while, and I hope this is the year we get it passed.
Got Representative Myers and Berg and Schultz on my list. So Representative Myers, you're next.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Representative Hansen. More of a procedural type thing, but we talked, you know, it was brought up about information to workers. And, you know, I think we've seen bills with more information to workers. We'll probably see a lot more bills for information to workers. Has DLI or MnOSHA, as some of these bills or in your experience in the past, ever put together forms for employers to follow to help assist them? Because I think, you know, there is also that information piece to the worker so they see it, but helping some of these maybe smaller business owners with, you know, a background of some of us with smaller businesses that would assist them so that they are being covered if they don't have larger departments.
Mr. Hess.
Mr. Speaker, Representative, yes, there are some materials put out by MnOSHA, different languages. There also are been posters put out by Dolly explaining the packing house workers' bill of rights. So there are materials. I also know that if they would actually contact OSHA, a number of them will walk them through. But that's a very good idea. I'd love to see OSHA in every plant in the state walking the operators through on this.
And Representative Myers, my experience with MnOSHA in the construction field, their OSHA consultation, they would rather educate the employers and help them out, do what they've got to do so that they don't have violations than have to fine them. That's been my experience. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, what I think is, you know, there are a lot of electronic forms that can be developed through the, you know, the agencies that then can be provided to these employers so that, you know, we're not getting, you know, errors. I mean, every little bit that, again, we can help the workers and the employers, that means, you know, we're showing a good balance of, you know, for people of Minnesota.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Myers. Look on page 5 of 6 on the fiscal note, and DLI estimates 50,000 one time for outreach and education efforts to develop training and presentations for employees, employers, and community organizations. You know, one of the differences between now and 2007 is we were a little more paper back then than we are now, and you know, having electronic versions are easy to update, and I think this 50K in the fiscal note is really important on helping everyone get the word out.
Representative Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm astounded that there's a theme coming from the other side of the table that you often consider human error and repeat that, well, people are human, they make errors. But I don't see you considering the workers as human. Over and over again, it's the business owners or the corporations, they're human, they make errors, but we've heard testimony from workers over and over again so far in this committee about how they're not safe at work, how they're taken advantage of at work, how they're disposable. But for you, it always comes down to the errors. And Mr. Hess earlier was talking about the safety in the plants. We know that workers aren't safe in those kind of plants. We know that depending on their status, they'll just walk away from the job if they're hurt. That's what human is. And the reason that I asked if DLI had any data on the wage theft issue or compliance is because we know that if they had the data, it would be astounding what the workers go through, the wages they lose, how they're taken advantage of, how they're considered disposable. And once again, I will say this, all 2 years of this term, if I need to, that when we talk about workers, we are talking about humans. So please extend your position on human, not just to corporations that might make errors, but the people who are actually suffering when those errors are made.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you. I think that was directed to me since I made that comment, this committee and the last committee, and she looked at me the whole time. Representative Berg, I guess I'll have to replay the tape for you because I've said many things in regards to the safety and the well-being of the employees, the workers. And matter of fact, so much so that in the last committee you said you're in love with me because I was protecting the workers. And then you said, unfortunately, you're sorry because I'm going to vote against the bill and you were disappointed. So I will stand for my accusations and simply say you are not accurate. I've never said anything that workers are disposable. That came from your side. This side never said such a thing. And if any of my colleagues said that, they'd be taken out to the woodshed, including myself if I said such a stupid thing.
And members, this is a good time.
I would never say that. So, Mr. Chair, let me finish. So, yes, we protect. Our job is for labor and industry. We protect the workers, the employees, and the employers. That's our duty. And out of my mouth, which I'm very careful of how I articulate and what I say, because I'm from a family of 7 and an Irish, and you're not just supposed to blurt things out without thinking, I believe I've always said that we protect the workers, and even cited labor of industry and DALI and MOSHA on their great laws in protecting the employees. So I do take issue, Representative Berg, and for the record, we do speak to favor and help the employees and their safety and well-being.
And members,
Mr. Chair,
this is a good time to remind people that under Masons, that the debate is the issue, not the personalities, and we should keep personality out of the debate. And with that reminder, I'm going to go on. The next person on my list is Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair and members, and Representative Hansen. Appreciate this bill, and I also appreciate the comments made by colleagues around the table about our strong Minnesota workforce. And as we've discussed throughout this committee, it's important that we have a strong business climate with a strong workforce, and the two need to work hand in hand together. And I'm sure that there is some information, and Representative Hansen, I'd actually provide an opportunity for you to kind of explain how would this law put us as compared to the states around us, specifically as it relates to competitiveness to the future of meatpacking and processing facilities.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schultz. So I have not checked with the Dakotas or Iowa or Wisconsin. I would doubt if similar legislation would be moving in those states, just knowing the makeup. I think the opportunity here is that we're updating existing law, modernizing it, and that if this is going to drive other these businesses out of the state, I think they were in a pretty weak position to begin with, because this is providing information to the employers, to the employees. I don't think this is too much to ask. I don't think it's an excessive burden. I think it helps the employer and clearly helps the employee. But to your direct question, I have not checked with those states. I don't know if Mr. Hess has a comparable experience with some of the surrounding states.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Hess.
Representative, the first state to pass a packing house workers' bill of rights was Nebraska. So it's us in Nebraska.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Hansen, for the answers. I certainly appreciate that. You know, my own experience, and hopefully that was shared by the host of us during the course of the pandemic, was just we needed to shine the light on the fact that we don't have enough meat processing and packing facilities here in Minnesota, but here in the United States, and they aren't owned by those here in the United States. During my previous work on the congressional level, I worked on that to make sure that we're enhancing our meat processing capabilities, because what I hear from producers is that we don't even have a place to bring you know, our meat or whatever it might be, right? We don't have a place to process, and that's why competitiveness is important to me. Recognizing our rich history and tradition here in Minnesota and how agriculture is the backbone of who we are and who we have been. And yes, we have tremendous workers who work in this field. But let's recognize that we need to ensure we have a competitive marketplace to do this so that we're not increasing those costs for producers to send this meat or whatever it might be to another state, to a place far, far away from here where Minnesota workers don't benefit.
Representative Schultz. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of this type of thing is it's not so much that we're trying to protect the big JBLs, the mega million-dollar corporations. This also impacts the small local guy. And if we think back to the pandemic, when the big meat processors was shut down due to the COVID, farmers were having to destroy much of their herd of whatever it is they raise. So in the beginning of that, I took it upon myself, right as we were going back into session, I think of the following year, to save the farmer. When we ended up selling 700 pigs, the biggest hurdle we had is we could not find a processor. We don't have lockers in every small town anymore. And some of the ones that are available, there's one in Clear Lake, McDonald's Meats, not related. Yeah, he's actually my neighbor too. But they were too busy trying to keep up with their end of it. So, I mean, luckily we did find it. But this type of stuff snuffs out the little guy and keeps forcing everything to the big three or whatever it is we have that are all foreign owned. And we wonder why they make so damn much money, because they have no competition anymore. And it's not just, is this reasonable? It's not horrible. I mean, do I like seeing these fines? And I agree with what Chair Nelson said. I mean, in the trades, we often see OSHA basically, you know, training and educating, and even Dolly. If you look at, they have a monthly thing they put out of infractions, and it's kind of like my little junk mail I love to read. But they often reduce the fine dramatically, as long as the person is making an effort to, you know, fix their ill ways. But it's not just this one. It's wage theft. It's sick and safe leave. It's all these additional layers of bureaucracy that these small employers, these farmers, they can't – I mean, they literally have to go hire more and more people. I don't know, Chair Nelson, do you know how many employees you have to be properly running be a general contractor, to be compliant with all regulations? There is an actual number on this.
Representative Eklund, I'm not sure. I've been retired for a few years, so I think I don't know.
Well, in continuing at a few years ago, if you had less than 5 employees, you could not be compliant with all of state's regulations. It's just physically not possible. So that is the concern that I have about this. And I do have a question to you, Representative Hansen. What is the reasoning to change this part if an employee quits or resigns, that instead of having 5 days to pay them, you have to pay them in 3 days? I mean, what drove that need? And especially, like, again, I mean, we're not talking about JBL all the time here or these big, massive meat packers. These are a lot of small mom-and-pop shops. So I'm curious as to where it came from that we had to strike 5 and put in 3.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Eklund, the world's changed. People move fast. You know, 5 days, 3 days, they may be moving out, get the pay, and gone. I mean, as Mr. Hess said, people, they're scared. So providing, and we're also in a world where cutting a check versus making the payment 3 days versus 5 days. Again, I want to go back to COVID, and let's talk about, because we've heard about the pay. People died. People died in those packing houses. And actually, my understanding is that the rate of death was higher in the meatpacking industry than almost any other industry. Because the line kept moving to make the profit. The line kept moving because people wanted their pigs butchered. So people who may not have understood what was happening because they didn't have the information. Didn't have the information that could have helped them. Because the profit had to be made. And I'm not talking about small butchers. Smithfield, JBS. Huge. Huge operations. Thousands of pigs. Thousands of chickens, thousands of turkeys.
Representative Mecklen, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I didn't really get a sound answer out of that. I'm not understanding, like, what is there? I mean, people move. People always move. I think most employers, especially small employers, they usually pay them on the way out the door when they choose to leave. Or if there's some reason why they quit or resigned. But because they chose to quit or resign, that was at their discretion. So now all of a sudden, you know, the hubby and wife that run the small business, they got to stop everything they're doing and go get out the checkbook. There's got to be some administrative reason for this. And it seems to me that it doesn't really change much. I'm just trying to figure out there's got to be something else to this. And what would be driving it, I guess.
And Representative Mecklen, from my knowledge, if you lay somebody off or you fire them and they request it, you have to, as an employer, provide them a check within 24 hours. This is 3 days as opposed to that 24 hours for somebody that quits and leaves. So I don't know how much more of a burden that would be having to get a 2 extra days to do it as opposed to if they ask when you lay them off for their check, you have to give it to them within 24 hours. I think that's current state law. So,
and let me just,
Representative Hansen.
There is, Mr. Chair, and Representative, there is no conspiracy or something behind this. This is just providing prompt payment. We have a world where people move quickly. It's different than 2007. I would ask Mr. Hess, back when the last stockyard and packing house that was in South St. Paul closed, and we were trying to reach the unemployed workers, how many could you reach? How many were gone right away before they knew what their rights were?
Representative Mr. Hess.
Mr. Chair, that's one example in South St. Paul, and we had one of our beef operations go down. I just could look back at Buffalo Lake. We had a meat processing plant there. It was incredible. We had maybe 200 workers there. They announced closing the plant for a number of reasons. We set up a retraining thing. We had very little participation because people just split. And it devastated the school district there because all of a sudden they lost 100 students because they moved on to other towns that had other processing to do. And, yeah, I mean, they just flew. And some folks left because their documentation was shaky. Others left because they just don't trust government. And some were just, we got to go because they live paycheck to paycheck.
Representative Mecklert. Any further questions? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Hansen, you mentioned, and I could just not be understanding your language correctly here, but you just mentioned that it was about the profits related to large corporations, right? And there's been plenty of comment made about how this will impact small meat processors and packers as well. And by what I see in the definitions, and we could see clarity here too, an employer in this is any individual who employs any person. So that regulates big to small. And certainly the meat processors in my district are not big corporate processors.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you look on the definitions on 3 and 4, employer, you are correct, Representative Schultz. But it always seems when we focus on the small, they have those communications. They're probably the easiest who communicate because the workers are right there 1-to-1, 2-to-1. I go in the butcher shop where I know that there's pigs being butchered, cattle being butchered, they have that communication. When you have a large operation, this isn't too much to ask.
Representative Schultz, and then we can wrap up here.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll argue with that point, right? And it's because of the burdens that we're going to see added to small business owners across the state of Minnesota during this legislative session. So to my friends across the aisle, regulatory humility and certainty is incredibly important, not just to big business or corporations, but small businesses on main streets and rural communities and in every community across the state. This is going to add to the burden of business owners, of employers, of the people who help Minnesotans go to work every day. And this is just one of the cuts along the way to hampering our ability to create a competitive Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Hansen, you want to wrap up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Good discussion today. I would invite members to co-author the bill. It's pretty simple. You just go on authors and add on to House File 70. You know, I know Representative McDonald, you could have a change of heart and co-author.
I make might. It bipartisan. I just might.
You know, it's just providing information. So I'd invite you to do that. This isn't a huge deal in some ways, but it is a huge deal in other ways. Providing basic information to people to help them will help the employee and the employer. These laws that we're modifying here haven't been changed in a long time. Our state has changed, our world has changed, and we need to update and evolve those requirements. I'd ask you to support this, to provide basic information, and to have a consequence for that information if it doesn't occur, so that we can provide protection for the workers and the employers and help out our state. I'd ask for your support.
And with that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 70 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Motion prevails. The bill's on its way.
Thank you.
And members, at the beginning of the we said we were going to put out the minutes, but when we got the corrected fiscal note, we also got our corrected minutes. So Representative Mecklen, seeing as how you looked at both copies from two different packets, what's your pleasure?
I would like to move the minutes as currently presented.
Motions are made to approve the minutes from the meeting of January 17th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, our next meeting is next Tuesday, January 24th. And if we can try and make sure we're here at 1 o'clock so we can get started with a quorum. So
when is it?
Tuesday. Our next meeting's Tuesday. I just